Morning. So the scripture reading is 2 Samuel 4, verse 4. Again, that is 2 Samuel 4, verse 4. Jonathan, the son of Saul, had a son who was crippled in his feet. He was 5 years old when the news about Saul and Jonathan came from Jezreel, and his nurse took him up and fled. And as she fled in her haste, he fell and became lame. And his name was Mephibosheth.
I'd like to start off by apologizing to Colin for giving him that name to pronounce. Good job. Actually, before I get started, I'd like to just make a quick announcement. You may have noticed in your bulletins, if you open them up and you look on the second page there, there is a little listing for care packages. We are in desperate need of items for the care packages that in a couple of weeks we're going to be putting them together. And it's for homeless people, for those in need that we meet on the streets, so that we can basically take these bags with us out, put it in your car, just leave it there. You can, it's imperishable foods, at least for the most part, as best we can get it. And so you can forget about it until you see someone in need, and then you've got something to give them out, and it'll have a little card in there about the church, and hopefully we can, it's just another way that we can be doing good deeds out there in the world as we're called to do. And, I just want to emphasize that we are in desperate need for a lot of these items, except for the bags. We do not need the plastic bags. I think we're good on those. But everything else, if you're out the store in the next week or two, or even if you're not, go ahead and go to the store and pick some up and bring them to the fellowship hall. We would really appreciate that. And I know that the people out there in the community will appreciate it as well. Have you ever felt like you were dealt a bad hand in life? Like life maybe was unfair to you. Like somehow you lost in a cosmic lottery of some kind when you were born. It's very easy to get into this mindset. Because what we do is we compare ourselves to other people. And this is very natural. It's something we do all the time. But what we do often is we compare upwards rather than comparing downwards, right? We compare ourselves to people who are supposedly better off than us, so that we can feel bad for ourselves, rather than comparing ourselves to people who are worse off than us and realizing just how blessed we really are. I know I'm guilty of this. Oftentimes I would ask myself why I had not, quote-unquote, won in the cosmic lottery. I would ask myself, why was I born into a single-parent household? Why was I born into a household that was so poor? In fact, we weren't just poor, we were po. We couldn't afford the other O or the R, okay? That's how poor we were. We were so poor that when our shoes, when my shoes, broke, and I could wave at you with my foot through my shoe, we had to duct tape the shoe rather than go buy new shoes, right? Because we couldn't afford to buy new shoes right away. We couldn't just afford whatever meal we wanted. We couldn't just go out to eat, right? We couldn't just go on vacation. We were on a very strict budget. In fact, I remember I would go to school and I would look at other kids and they'd have these, they'd bring these lunches with them that I would get very jealous about. It was Lunchables. That was the big one for me, right? Because Lunchables were very popular and yet they were pretty expensive. And so when I looked at these kids with the Lunchables, I became very jealous and I would get angry at these kids because they had something better than me, right? But that's all an attitude problem. It's all about how you look at things. Because this idea that I've lost in a lottery, it's a manufactured idea. And this is what we do when we compare ourselves upwards and forget about comparing ourselves downwards. And really, when we look at, it's really the whole old notion of looking at the glass half full versus half empty, right? Because in reality, when I look at my own life, I won the cosmic lottery. I was born into a Christian family. I was born into a Christian family that was devoted to God. My mom taught me to be devoted to God. I was born into a Christian church family that was loving and helped develop my faith. I was born into a loving family, not just with my mom and brothers, but also my extended family. And I'll tell you, my mom, even though we were poor, she always kept us well fed. There was never a moment when I went to bed hungry. Because she knew what the priorities were. We couldn't just go out and buy things that we wanted, but we always had a meal on the table. And also, I was born into 21st century United States of America. Which means even if I'm poor in the United States of America, I am rich by the standards of the rest of the world and by the standards of the years previous, right? Because we live in a day and age in which we are more blessed and rich than ever before. And so it's all about how I would look at things, right? It's a choice, and it's a choice we all have. We can look back at our lives and look at the bad things, and we could say, well, I've lost the lottery, what's going on? And what we do is we see other people who've been born with supposed blessings that are supposedly better than the things we have, and we ask, why would God allow such an injustice to take place? Why does God allow this person to be, he didn't earn this, you know, whatever blessings he has, he was born to it. So why did God not let me be born into such, into the same blessings, right? But again, it's an attitude problem. Because it's a manufactured idea where we compare ourselves to other people. But in truth, everyone experiences ups and downs. As Tim said earlier, when he quoted Jesus from the Sermon on the Mount, God sends rain to the righteous and the unrighteous. Every one of us receives blessings, and every one of us receives hard times as well. Everyone in this world has ups and downs. We're all going to go through ups and downs in life, where we pass through dark valleys, where we feel like we can't move on, and then we're going to pass over joyous mountaintops, where we're extremely excited for what's happening, and we hope that it continues that way. Life is like this. You know, it goes up and down, but there needs to be a consistent thread through all of that. That no matter if you're on the mountaintop or in the deep dark valley, there's a consistent thread in your life that remains the same regardless of your circumstance. And I'm talking about your relationship with God. How you feel toward God and your relationship with God and how you live your life should not be determined on whether or not you're on the mountain or in the valley. In fact, it cannot be determined by that. And how you feel toward God cannot be determined by how much He's blessed you physically on this earth. So I want to ask a question this morning for all of us. Do we love our blessings or our blesser? Do you love your blessings or do you love the one who gave you those blessings in the first place? Because so often we can get infatuated by the things God's given us and we forget the one who gave it to us. I think this is a very important question for us to ask, and we're going to get back to it in a moment, but to further examine this idea, I'd like to turn our attention to a character in Scripture that you might not have heard of before. His name is hard to pronounce, and if you have heard of him, I can guarantee that you haven't studied him very often, right? You may have studied him extensively, in which I'm glad you have, but you probably haven't gone back to him very often. And I'm talking, of course, of a guy named Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth was not born with such a crazy name. In fact, he had another crazy name. His name was Merab Baal, which means opponent of Baal. He was born into the family, into the lineage of Saul. He was the son of Jonathan. And we know Saul was the first king of Israel. So this boy, Merab Baal, was born a prince, destined one day to become king over all of Israel. He was born with a silver spoon in his mouth, as the saying goes, right? He had all the blessings you can imagine. He had all these amazing physical things on this earth. He would never have to worry a day in his life. At least that's what people thought, right? And that's what so often we think about people in power. People who are rich, well off. They'd never have to worry about anything, right? Wrong. Because everyone, again, everyone's life goes up and down. If you haven't suffered yet, just wait. It'll happen. And Mephibosheth was no different. And yet, actually, Mephibosheth became a person that we would all say was one of the poorer people in life. Because as we read in 2 Samuel chapter 4, verse 4, something happened. There was a particular day in which all of these amazing blessings that he had were ripped from him. In an instant. His father, his grandfather were both killed in battle. And so, understandably, the family of Saul, where Mephibosheth, where Merab Baal was, you know, was residing as a 5-year-old, the family becomes panicked, right? Because they're afraid, okay, think about it this way. This kid, this five-year-old, is now rightful king of Israel. And they're thinking to themselves, okay, he's now become a target for everyone else. All the power-hungry people in Israel, all the people who want the throne, they're going to be coming after this kid, and they're not going to be merciful. So understandably so, the nurse, his nanny, picks him up and is about to go flee, to go run away, and in some way, shape, or form, she drops him on his feet. We don't know how exactly it happened, but probably his ankles were broken, or his feet were broken, and they healed improperly. And because of this, he grew up having to probably use crutches his whole life. If not, he had to be carried. It was that bad. He became crippled because he was full. He was dropped on the floor. And so now here he is, this prince, right? This person who's going to one day be king. Now he's an orphan. He's impoverished. He's on the run. He's crippled. It's so bad that his name is changed, and we don't know who changes his name, but his name is changed to Mephibosheth, which aptly means son of shame. This great prince, he has nothing to worry about, right? Now he's the son of shame. And he's grown up probably in some kind of squalor. We're not exactly sure. We know he's been helped out by a couple of people. Otherwise, he'd probably be dead, right? But he's been helped out by a few people so that he can survive. But in all of this time, as he grows up into an adult, he's able to watch the throne from a distance. And he's able to see his grandfather's opponent, right? At least in his mind, his grandfather's opponent, David, take the throne. And he's able to see David's kingdom flourish. He's able to see David's riches grow. And this palace that he lives in is, you know, marvelous to behold. And the whole time, I have to imagine, he wondered to himself, why has God conspired against me? What have I done? I was only a child, right? Is it because of my family? Am I destined to be in this horrible life because of my family name? Because of the sins of my grandfather? Am I destined to live as this son of shame? I have to imagine he wondered and asked all of those questions. He asked himself, you know, as people ask today, has the universe conspired against me? And he grew up thinking all of this and thinking he had been forgotten until one day he summoned before the king. We've already read in chapter 4 one verse that kind of tells you his background. But as we move on, we go to chapter 9. We go to chapter 9 and we see his story continue, where this young man has grown up as this crippled, poor orphan, and here he is being invited, actually being summoned, to the king. And I have to imagine he was terrified. He must have been trembling as he came into the presence of the king, as he went up to the throne, and he throws his crutches aside and he falls on his face before the king. And the king says, Mephibosheth. And he says, here is your servant. He says, I'm your servant. And he's waiting there. And I have to imagine he was wondering to himself, is this the moment my past is going to catch up with me? Is this the moment my family name is finally going to lead to my death? And I have to imagine he hoped that it would be quick. But before any of those thoughts could process fully, David says to him something that must have thrown him for a loop. David says, chapter 9. In verse 7, do not fear, for I will surely show kindness to you for the sake of your father Jonathan, and will restore to you all the land of your grandfather Saul, and you shall eat at my table regularly. Now, of course, we know David better than Mephibosheth. We know David was wanting to show kindness to Mephibosheth for the sake of Jonathan. For the sake of this brother that he had, you know, this great friend that his love was deep and abiding for. And he wants to show kindness to the son of Jonathan, but also to really for the whole family for his sake. And so we know David doesn't have these, you know, cruel intentions as Mephibosheth probably believed. But here he is, before the king. He's thrown himself down on the ground. And the king says, don't be afraid. I'm going to give you certain blessings. First of all, he gives him the land that had once belonged to his family. So obviously that's a great blessing, right? So he was impoverished, and now he has all of this amazing land, these possessions, you know, the fields that can be cultivated. He's got his riches back. Okay? So things are turning around, right? But more so, David also says, you can eat at my table regularly. He's invited to the king's banquet table. Okay? Now we need to understand the context and surrounding this so that we can understand how tremendous a blessing this is. Because we live in, again, 21st century America, where if you're hungry, you can just go down to the Taco Bell. But this was a day and age, a chicken sandwich, you had to pluck the bird. Well, first you had to kill the bird, then you had to pluck the bird, then you had to cook the meat, and you know, cut out all the innards, you had to cook the meat, you had to grind the grain, you had to wait for the yeast to rise. If you wanted a chicken sandwich in the morning, I don't know if you'd have it by the evening, okay? Because that was this day and age, right? So that's what, it's an amazing blessing that here Mephibosheth doesn't even have to worry about food anymore. That every day he's invited to this feast, not just any food, the king's feast, right? He's able to go to this table and eat before the king. But look at how Mephibosheth responds to this amazing blessing. It says, again, he prostrated himself and said, what is your servant that you should regard a dead dog like me? I think there's power in a name. I think there was power in his name to Mephibosheth. In the sense that he started believing he was a son of shame, right? What kind of self-esteem must he have had at this point? To think of himself as a dead dog. He says, I'm worthless, David. King David, why are you showing kindness to me? I am worth nothing. But David waves it off. It says, then the king called Saul's servant Ziba and said to him, all that belonged to Saul and to all his house I have given to your master's grandson. That being Mephibosheth. It says, you and your sons and your servants shall cultivate the land for him. And you shall bring in the produce so that your master's grandson may have food. Nevertheless, Mephibosheth, your master's grandson, shall eat at my table regularly. Now Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. So here all of these amazing riches are given back to Mephibosheth, regardless of how he felt for himself. David says, no, I'm going to give you all of these things. I'm going to welcome you at my table regularly. And in verse 11, it tells us, it says that he was regularly eating at the king's table as if he was a son of the king. It makes that comparison. It says he's basically been adopted as a son of King David. A few months ago, we started a sermon series on the book of Ephesians. And one of the very first series we did was talking about Ephesians chapter 1. I hope it wasn't so long ago that you don't remember. Okay? It was in chapter 1 and verses 5 and 6, we're told that God the Father predestined us for adoption. And that's kind of what's happening here with Mephibosheth, right? The king has adopted him into the family that he can eat at the king's table. And in the same way, we have been adopted as well. By our king. By our father. Obviously, I'm talking about God there. And all of this happens through his son, Jesus Christ. But even though our story kind of mirrors, or the fact that our story kind of mirrors Mephibosheth's right now, should give us a warning, should give us pause, because this isn't the end of his story. We move on to chapter 16, and we read in the first four verses there that this story actually takes an interesting twist. Go ahead and turn there. Second Samuel chapter 16. What we find is David is in a very difficult time in his life. Probably the most difficult time in his life. Or at least very close to the top. Again, even kings have ups and downs. And so David is in such a horrible place in his time, in his life, because his own son, Absalom, has betrayed him. He's on the run. He doesn't know who he can trust. In fact, he has to leave his own home. He has to leave the city that really he built as the center of his kingdom. And he has to go on the run into the wilderness. And as he's leaving, he expects all of those loyal to him to meet with him and go with him, right? And as he's leaving, he comes across the servant of Mephibosheth, Ziba. Verse 1, chapter 16. It says, "Now when David had passed a little beyond the summit, behold, Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth, met him with a couple of saddled donkeys, and on them were 100 loaves of bread, 100 clusters of raisins, 100 summer fruits, and a jug of wine. The king said to Ziba, 'Why do you have these?' And Ziba said, 'The donkeys are for the king's household to ride, and the bread and summer fruit for the young men to eat, and the wine for whoever is faint in the wilderness to drink.' Then the king said, 'And where is your master's son?'" So David here is met by the servant of Mephibosheth, and he's given all of these gifts, and he looks around and he says, "Well, where's Mephibosheth?" Right? And Ziba says, "Behold, he is staying in Jerusalem, for he said, 'Today the house of Israel will restore the kingdom of my father to me.'" Do you understand what's being said there? Ziba tells David, Mephibosheth stayed behind because when he saw that this coup was taking place, when he saw that your kingdom was being ripped from you, he thought to himself, "You know what? I will be able to get my old life back. I'll be able to get that what's coming to me, what was rightfully mine in the first place." He's thinking to himself, "I can become king again. Or a king like I was supposed to be all along." How heartbroken must have David been at this point? He had shown Mephibosheth such a tremendous blessing in that he showed him mercy, showed him kindness and love. And how had Mephibosheth repaid him? By spitting him in the face, slapping him. An utter betrayal that I'm sure must have broken David's heart, because we see in the next verse, he declares that all the land that was once Mephibosheth's now belongs to Ziba. He takes away the blessing because he's so heartbroken. And this is where that question I posed in the beginning comes back to us. Now the story of Mephibosheth isn't over, but I want to remind us of that question I asked at the beginning. Do you love your blessings or your blesser? Because at this moment in time, it seems like Mephibosheth loves his blessings more than he loved the blesser. Here David was, this amazing, kind king, gave him all these blessings, and what does Mephibosheth do? He doesn't care about David, he cares more about the things he got. And he wants more. And the moment David's life becomes hard, he's not willing to go with them, right? We cannot allow the ups and downs of life to change that one consistent thing. Because the only consistent part of life is that it will be inconsistent. And so we cannot allow our relationship with the great blesser, God, to change based upon current circumstances. We can't be infatuated with the things he's given us, because sometimes those things are going to be taken from us. And so our love for God needs to be enduring. It needs to be everlasting, regardless of how our life is going. Now I'm happy to say this is not the end of Mephibosheth's story. Move to chapter 19. Chapter 19. David has been restored as king. He's moved back into the palace. His son has died, which is a terrible tragedy in his life, of course. But at least he gets to come back home. His kingdom is reestablished to him. And just as he's settling in, Mephibosheth shows up again. And Mephibosheth, his hair is all grown out. His beard is all unkempt and mangy. He stinks. As soon as he enters the room, you can smell him, because he hasn't changed his or washed his clothes since the day David left. Another thing, the text tells us he hasn't taken care of his feet. So his ailment is probably even worse at this point. And so I don't know if he had to be carried in or if he had to hobble in. It seems to me like he had to hobble in because, you know, all of the servants and the blessings had been taken from him. And he goes before the king, and the king asks him, "Why were you not there with me? Why did you abandon me?" Verse 26. So he answered, "Oh, my lord the king, my servant deceived me. For your servant said, 'I will saddle a donkey for myself and that I may ride on it and go with the king,' because your servant is lame. Moreover, he has slandered your servant to my lord the king. But my lord the king is like the angel of God. Therefore, do what is good in your sight." So all along, it was Ziba, the servant, taking advantage of the fact that he's crippled and basically abandoning him at his home and taking all of the things with him and then lying as a ploy, right? It's a ploy so that Ziba could get all the land to himself. And so David responds when he hears this. I think it's obvious that it's true, but he hears this and he says, "Okay, I will give half of the land back to you and half the land to Ziba." Mephibosheth waves it off and he says, "I don't care about the land. I don't care about any of that. I'm just happy you made it home safe." He had let himself go so severely, not because he'd lost his blessings, not because he, you know, had any care toward them, but because his king had been on the run and he was worried for him. You see, he loved his king. He loved his blesser way more than he loved his blessings. It had all been a lie. He loved his king, David, so much. He longed for a relationship with his king so much that he said, "I don't care about the land. I just want you safe." Are we like Mephibosheth with our blesser, with our king who has shown mercy on us? I think a lot of times we can be so infatuated, again, by the things God gives us that we forget that he's the one behind it all. See, we are sons of shame. We are children of shame, or we were. We were sinful, we were arrogant, we were defiant. We were dead in our trespasses, and God owed us a punishment. But he showed us mercy. Just like David showed mercy to Mephibosheth, God has shown mercy to us, and he's granted us an adoption so that we can sit at the king's table. But we can't be caught up in what feast lies before us at the moment. We've got to long for and desire a relationship with God, with our king. Because that in the end is what matters. Now there's one more mention of Mephibosheth in 2 Samuel, and we'll talk about it in a little bit more detail tonight. But suffice it to say, if some people come before David and they demand a recompense of some kind to the family of Saul. In other words, they are demanding that David give him some of Saul's family over to be executed because of the sins of Saul. And David, we're told, in chapter 21, in verse 7, it says, "The king spared Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, because of the oath of the Lord which was between them, between David and Saul's son Jonathan." David spares Mephibosheth in the end. I think that, again, that shows just how close they wound up getting, and just how important Mephibosheth felt the king was to him. So these questions, you know, again, pass through our minds about loving the blesser or the blessing. And I want us to reemphasize that, but before we draw to a close, I have a couple of applications. A couple of things we need to take from this story. First of all, we've got to stop comparing ourselves to other people. You know, we can compare upwards and see people who are supposedly better off than us, and we can feel bad about ourselves. Or we can compare downwards and realize just how blessed we really are. And maybe there is some use to that. But I really believe that in the long run, comparing our physical blessings to other people is generally a waste of time. It's not going to do us any good. There's no progress to be had by comparing ourselves so often to all of the people around us. Because there's always someone out there who's worse off than you. And there's always someone out there who's, quote unquote, better off than you. And so it becomes, again, a matter of perspective, a matter, and I think what happens is it leads to an attitude of entitlement, where you are not pleased with your, quote unquote, allotment of blessings that God has granted you, right? And you feel that God owes you something. But let me just make one thing really clear. God owes you nothing but punishment. The only thing you are entitled to is death because of your sin. And when we realize that, when we realize that the King has shown that kind of mercy to us, that even though we were entitled to death, he has spared us, well then just like Mephibosheth, we can focus on the King, on the Blesser, and we can forget about all of these things that don't matter in the long run. We'll be a lot more pleased with the blessings God gives us when we realize the sorry state we were in without Him. Secondly, we need to understand something about our priorities. And again, it all comes down to that we should be grateful. We can be grateful for God's blessings, and we should be. But we cannot distort what's most important. We can't distort our priorities. Of course we should be grateful to God. Giving Him the credit He deserves is, I think, a very biblical concept. We should always understand that God is the blesser, that His blessings come from us. Because a lot of times I think what happens is we go one of two ways. And maybe you agree with me on this. Let's just see. I think a lot of times we go one way or another. And that is, on the one hand, when times are tough, we reject God. We blame Him. He owes us something. And so we get mad at God. We think, what are you doing, God? And then finally when the blessings come back, that's when we say, oh, okay, God is on my side. This attitude is wrong. But on the other hand, I think people do the opposite, right? Which is that they forget God when times are good. And then when times get tough, that's when they remember God. That's when they decide, okay, I need God. And yet, when God blesses them and things get better again, they think that they forget that God is the one who made it better. And they take the credit for themselves. This, too, is wrong. We cannot be caught up in all of in comparing ourselves or in all of the blessings that God is giving us or not giving us in our own minds. We can't get into this entitled attitude. We need to understand what's most important. And that is that no matter how much God gives us physically on this earth, these external blessings, even if He gives us none of them, He's still given us the most important blessing of all. That adoption into His family. That salvation that He did not owe us, but He granted to us because He loves us. When we remember that, when we remember what's most important, well, then we get a lot better about the blessings we do have. And really that leads me to my third point, is that our relationship with God is not determined by the ups and downs of life. We cannot allow the inconsistency of life to ruin that one consistency that should be there. The one consistent thread in our life should be that no matter how good things are or how bad things are, we love God. We desperately and uncontrollably desire a relationship with Him. That should be the one consistent thing in your life. And I hope that it is. So let me ask you one more time. Do you love your blessings or your blesser? I think the immediate answer would be, of course I love the blesser. But really think about it. Really examine yourself, because so often we become infatuated by what's in front of our eyes and we forget who's behind the scenes. So I hope that you'll consider this. If you're struggling with the answer to this question, we're going to have an invitation song in just a few moments. You can come forward. We can pray with you as a congregation. We can talk with you. There's going to be a couple of elders up here with me, and we can help you in whatever way you need. Or if you're here this morning and you are ready and you need to be baptized into Christ, we can do that as well. Whatever your need is, please don't hesitate. If you struggle with this very question, something in your life needs to change. Don't hesitate. Please come. Let's stand and sing together.